from the rugged desert outside Yuma, Arizona. This is Outpost Outspoken. Outpost Outspoken is the official podcast of U.S. Army Yuma Proving Ground, which conducts natural environment testing of military equipment in Arizona, Alaska, and the tropics.
Welcome to Outpost Outspoken. I'm your host of this segment, Anna Henderson, and today I am recording from Panama. And my guest is Eric Nicolaisen. He is a rescue first aid specialist and a jungle expert here at TRGC. Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Jungle expert. I just received a briefing from you. You did not scare me, but you made me very aware of all of the things that could potentially hurt us. How do you have such an extensive knowledge of all of this?
Well, I've had over 50 years experience, almost 60 years experience in jungle environment, Central America, South America, and even been over in Australia.
How did that come about?
Well, I was born here in the Republic of Panama, and as a child growing up, where was your playground? The jungle. So it's quite entertaining. Other children were, let's say, overcautious of the jungle from their parents, so they never entered it. I've always loved wildlife and found that the jungle, one of the most interesting places, you never stop learning. Every time you go into the environment, you learn something new. You see something new. It's an environment that you can love it, but you always have to remember that environment will never love you back.
I heard you say, do as I say, not as I do. Because we've seen pictures of you maybe holding something venomous or dangerous. How did you get to the point where you were so comfortable with these scary, with this scary animal life?
Well, after so many years in the environment, there's not too much that hasn't bit or stung you. So you pretty know the consequences from a bite or a sting. So you're that much more cautious. You know when a spider will attack you. Okay, it's just like an insect. An insect will walk on you, and the first instinct of a person is, don't even look at it. They slap at what's crawling on their arm. Okay, and what does an insect do or anything else? They defend themselves. So if a bee's walking on you, maybe he just wanted some salt from your sweat, and you reach down and slap him, he's going to sting you. If you look at him, you identify it, you can either blow him off, shake him off, or flick him off.
I thought that your brief was very informational, and not in a scary way, because you're worried about scariness and not in a way, but in a way of kind of you respect what's there.
Yes, this is to make a person, respect what is there in the environment. Be aware of it. Where are you stepping on? It could be a snake there on the other side of that log. Well, he's not there to bite you, but you step over it. If you step on him, he's going to defend himself. If you don't look, or you're going to sit down, or you're going to step over, you're stepping into their environment, their comfort zone, and they may not like it, so they will bite you. Not all snakes will inject venom. Venomous ones, for example, the fertile ants for one, which is the most common one who bites people, and the majority of which causes the deaths in tropical countries, Panama and South America. They're a very aggressive snake. Why are so many people bitten? 85%? Because the female produces live young twice a year. And they can produce anywhere from 65 to 110 live young. These little snakes come out and they're fully capable of biting. They are full of venom, born with venom. So be aware of it, sir. Look and watch around you. Watch where you put your hand. Watch where you put your feet. What's up in the upper canopy? And watch out for each other. You're there for each other. You're a team. Hey, watch where you're stepping over. Hey, there's a black palm tree filled up with thorns on your right-hand side. So you have to advise each other what's there if you're not. The environment is mesmerizing. All it takes is, for example, your concentration going as you look into the clouded or shadow environment to study or look at something, observe it, and you're not watching where you put your feet or watching where you put your hands.
Oh, I find myself listening to the birds chirping and then looking around, where is that bird? And right now we haven't hit the jungle yet. We're still in the, I guess the city, if you call it. But I can see how that can happen. Someone's just so mesmerized of everything that they're looking around, and then they lean on something or step on something. This is going to sound silly because I'm sure you've seen it, but have you seen an anaconda? That's like the snake that I feel like us in the States is the most common that we know of.
Anacondas are common in Suriname. Panama does not have anacondas. Their largest snake is a boa constrictor. 10 feet, 12 feet long, is a very good size one. Okay? People think that a constrictor crushes your bones or your structure itself. If, for example, you grab one, you're holding it behind the head, next thing he does, it automatically, he will go ahead and wrap himself around your arm. Every time your heart pulsates, your blood goes down, okay, he will tighten. Okay, so he'll continue to tighten and eventually cut off the circulation. A large one, for example, may go around your neck or around your chest cavity. And as you breathe, even though you're trying to hold him back with your hand, he will continually to constrict you. They kill by constriction and suffocation in that way. All the snakes will go ahead and they eat their prey head first.
Are these both snakes that you've come in contact with?
Yes, and in Suriname, come across the anacondas. At one time, there was one going across their concrete highway as big as around as a telephone pole. The head was in one part of the jungle and the tail was on the other side of the road, and it caused a traffic jam. People sat in their cars, waiting for the snake to cross. No one dared to, let's run it over, because it would definitely total out your suspension system on your vehicle, or your car could even become high-centered, depending on what type of vehicle you have.
What would you say is your favorite part about working here at TRTC?
Well, when I retired from the Army, I always thought, I would like to go exploring, see all the different jungles, and kind of end up with a job that pays me to go ahead and do what I enjoy that I was figuring on doing during my retirement.
You got a good gig.
So I don't feel like, when I'm out of the jungle, I don't feel like that I'm working. It's very, very enjoyable.
That's good. That's how it should be, right? And when they say, if you do something you love, you don't work a day in your life.
Well, how many people really love their jobs? It's a job. I got to go to work in the morning. Well, you're out in the jungle. You go, let's see what adventure is today. Something new I'll discover. Okay. Sometimes you see things, and especially today with a cell phone, you can photograph it. And if you have the time to identify it through a computer system, if not, take it to the Smithsonian. And occasionally there's something that they cannot even identify.
So you've seen a lot of things that most people will probably never get to see in real life.
Right. See, most people walk through life blind. They really don't observe, where they're stepping look at life going to go, I'm going to sit on the lawn today and catch a few rays of the sun. As they sit there, they're not looking at the environment. The grasses they're sitting on, what is in there? What kind of insect or animal life is in there moving around? Until they look at it and think, what if I were blind tomorrow? What could I see today? So looking into the grass itself, behind the little leaves and all this minute insect life, it's a whole world down in there that people just step on and keep on going.
Well, we are fortunate here at TRTC to have someone with your experience and your passion for the job. So thank you so much for what you do, for serving the Army, for what you do for the Army, and keeping us all safe here at SurePC.
Thank you.
Welcome to Outpost Outspoken. I'm your host for this segment, Anna Henderson. Today, Mike Jones joins me. He's a contracting officer representative with the Department of Public Works here at YPG. But he's actually here to tell us about how he and his dog, Eli, helped save a woman's life. Welcome, Mike.
Yes, thank you.
Tell me about your dog.
So my dog's name is Eli. He's a standard poodle, weighs about 65 pounds, dark chocolate. He's a very intelligent dog, as most standard poodles are. And being as I leave him at home during the week, you know, long days while we're out here on these 10-hour shifts, he's very adamant that in the evening, that after dinner, that he gets his evening walk in. Same on the weekends, first thing in the morning. He expects one in the morning and in the evening. So
set up the scene for us. You were taking Eli on your daily evening walk after dinner, and what happened?
So we had finished dinner, and it was about 7 o'clock. The sun was just getting ready to set. And so we took off from the house like we do every single day, and got about a quarter mile away from the house. And I was walking down the sidewalk, and there was a 6 or 7 foot tall cinder block wall that separated the sidewalk from the backyard of all the houses that were there. And we came to a point where Eli just suddenly sat down. He didn't want to move. He didn't want to stand up. And I was kind of perplexed because he had never done that before. And I tugged on his leash again, and he just sat there. And I was thinking to myself, is he hurt? Is he scared? You know, it's very strange the way he was acting. And so I faintly could hear a noise coming from the other side of this wall that we was against. And there was a small palm tree, and we was right in the corner of this backyard. There's typically a feral cat that lives in that area. And whenever Eli gets to that point, he gets super focused on trying to find this cat. So this noise I heard, it reminded me of an injured animal, or maybe it was that cat making that noise. And I didn't really want to be bothered with it. I didn't want Eli to get worked up and want to go chase that cat. So I was really trying to just move him along. But for whatever reason, he would not budge. And so... So
that's when you decided, okay, maybe let me take a look and see what's going on.
Yeah, what he did was he stood up, put his feet against the wall, and then he's like started sniffing up in the air. Like he could smell something, and that kind of clued me in that maybe there's something on the other side of that fence that's got his attention.
So then you look over the fence, because Eli's pretty tall. You said he's 60 pounds. I'm assuming he's pretty tall, but he can't look over the fence, so you look over.
Yeah, yeah. So he kind of backs off the fence, and I throw my arms up on top of the wall, and I pull myself up, and I look over the fence, and there's a woman. An elderly woman laying on the ground, face down. She was coherent, but she couldn't move, and she was just faintly mumbling or repeating to herself to help me, help me. And that was the noise that I was hearing. But because she was face down and her face was in the weeds, she was very muffled. So I wouldn't have been able to hear that. Because we was right by a busy street and the traffic would have drowned that out. So until I got up and actually made visual contact with that person, I had no idea that she was there.
What was your reaction when you saw her?
This person, she lives in our neighborhood, and I've seen her before many times, because over the years, she's an elderly woman that lives by herself, and her and Eli actually have met several times, and every time that Eli sees her, he always has this thing to run over and greet her, and she does the same. And so they know each other. They've been buddies. So I knew her first name. That was all. So when I saw her, I yelled her name, and I did get the response, and she said to help me. So yeah, it was quite a surprise.
I can imagine it was overwhelming for both of you, you know, her to finally get help and then you to have, you know, see her like that. Do you have any idea how long she was there?
I do. And I had asked her that, and she said she had been there since before lunch, and this was 7 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh my goodness.
So she'd been laying there in the sun in her backyard for probably 6 or 7 hours, unable to move.
Oh my goodness. Thank goodness for Eli, for him paying attention to the cries and for you paying attention to Eli. So what happened from there?
So at that point, I didn't have my phone with me. So I told her, I said, "You're going to be okay. I'll be right back and I'm going to go get you some help." So I sprinted back to my house with Eli. It's about a quarter mile. And I got back to the house, grabbed my phone. I left Eli there and then I sprinted back to her house. I wanted to make sure I got the correct address off the front of her house while I was talking to 911. And so I called 911, told them that I needed an ambulance, and there was a woman, an elderly woman, that had fallen. She was face down, and she couldn't move. And at that time, I was on the outside of the fence where I discovered her. So while the ambulance was coming, I was able to kind of go to the side of the house and go through an unlocked gate, make my way past some bushes and get into her backyard where she was laying. And I was able to kneel down beside her and let her know that help was on the way.
Oh, that must have been a huge relief for her. Did she cry tears of joy, tears of pain? What was her reaction?
Well, she was, you could tell in her voice, she was relieved that she had been found, but she was also seemed very, very weak. So there wasn't a lot of emotion. One of the things that got me is because she was face down and she couldn't move, she kept telling me she couldn't feel her arms. And she thought that was because she had been laying on them for so long that they went numb. She kept saying, "My arms have gone numb. I can't move them." And I said, "Oh, that's okay." I said, We don't want you to move right now." And all this time I was on the phone with 911 and they're asking me, you know, questions, gathering information. She had also broken her glasses when she fell, so she couldn't see. And so she didn't really know my voice, but she asked, she goes, who is this?" And I told her, I said, I knew she didn't know my name. I said, "It's the man with the brown dog." And she says, "The brown dog?" She goes, "Eli?" And I said, "Yes." And she's like, that's when you could hear the emotion in her voice. And she says, "I was so hoping you guys would come by." And I think she just said that because of our routine. Every single night we go past there. So she knew that eventually we would come by and was hoping that we would find her. And we did.
Oh, that gave me goosebumps. Oh, my goodness. You two are lifesavers. Has Eli ever done anything like this?
No, this is completely out of character. That's why it was so perplexing to me when he just sat down and refused to move and then stood up against the fence. I mean, if he wouldn't have done that, I would have had no reason to look over that fence.
And how's she doing now?
I've talked to her son because he goes over to her house and is taking care of her cat. And I was talking to him, and the full story has finally come out now that she's been able to tell it from her perspective. And she said that she was pulling weeds underneath a small tree. She lost her balance and fell forward, and her head went into the brick wall. And that's when she just collapsed and fell straight down. Well, it turns out that the reason she couldn't feel her arms was not because she was laying on them and they went numb. It was because she actually broke her neck when she hit the wall.
Goodness.
And so as she had laid there unable to move, she was basically paralyzed, at least her arms. And then once the paramedics came and they took her to the ER, her condition continued to worsen. She was losing feeling in her legs, and she started having trouble breathing because her lung function was affected by her broken neck. So that's why they air-evac'd her to Phoenix to get proper care.
Oh, what a terrifying situation. But fortunately, you and Eli were there to help her out. And, you know, now she's getting the proper care that she needs. But man, your When you look back and think about what you and Eli did, like, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, all the credit's on Eli. And for whatever reason, you know, everybody has their own beliefs in why dogs do certain things or how they're used. It was just a blessing. And I think, you know, I'll just say that I think God used us and let us be there and help that person. Because otherwise, what the hospital had told her son was that if she had, she wouldn't have made it through the night if nobody found her, because her lungs function was shutting down and it was getting to get cold that night. And so, you know, it's just a real special feeling to be used to help somebody in that kind of a situation.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for you and Eli helping this woman, and also for what you do every day here at YPG for the Army.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
This has been Outpost Outspoken. Thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time from the forefront of Army transformation.